Dive into the start of summer at Whole Foods Market. Check out their summer splash event with sales on fresh organic produce, organic strawberries, and a fan favorite sale on Ben & Jerry's and Talenti. Explore deals on grill-friendly meats like organic air-chilled chicken breast, beef and chicken kebabs, all with no antibiotics ever from our meat department. Plus, grab easy sides from prepared foods and cool off with refreshing drinks. Kick off your summer and shop in store or online at Whole Foods Market today.
Racing, rides, people, and places. With your hosts, Brad Banjoy, Matt DeAndrea, and Aaron Hagar. New media for a new type of motorsport enthusiast.
Ho, ho, ho. Welcome to the party, pal. How do you like that one, Matt? Put a smile on your face, didn't it?
You should be growing out the beard a little more.
Yeah. So, how you doing this Friday?
I'm doing well. Welcome to Shift and Steer. We are we're gonna be a man down.
We're man down.
Aaron's still moving, and he's rushing to beat a bunch of snow coming in for the weekend. If you guys follow him on his Instagram, then you'll see what he's got going on over there. But he's getting closer.
He's getting rid of stuff. He's giving stuff away, and now he's taking stuff in. So. Oh, man. Okay. He's as bad as me. speaking of which, I figured something out. Now, I thought I was, pretty on top of, these collectibles and things like that. And Matt, I was, I am seriously trying to clear house and I'm going through things box by box. And as you know, if you follow me on Instagram, I'm always finding things that I didn't even remember I had. But I put up, I found a box and it was labeled 80s and 90s performance brochures and catalogs. So I opened it up and there's like Moroso and there's, MSD and, you name it, performance company you can think of. And these are catalogs that I would have picked up, on a trip to SEMA, or they were mailed to me. Some of them are still in the envelopes that where they were mailed to me, and they're like, 1982, 1984, 1988, some all the way up to 1990. Well, I took a catalog and I go, oh, well, what do I think is it worth? Oh, $15. I put it up. I listed it. I turned around to photograph another one and it goes ding and it was sold. And I was like, what? It sold that fast? And I, so then what I should have done in the first place is done a search. 80s, 90s catalogs, if they're in really primo shape like my stuff, they're going for like 50, 60, 70, 80 and plus. I mean,
interesting.
I never even knew it. Because I was looking at magazines. Magazines aren't worth anything because they're worth maybe $5 or $10 because so many people had them, right?
Yeah.
And it's just crazy. So I've been going through box after box and listing all this crazy rare stuff that I have. Some of it is even to me, like rare. Like I found a catalog that I had gotten from GM back when I worked with GM a lot and at Boyd's, and it is like a 1988, I think. How to make your Fiero, Pontiac Fiero, into a full GTP race car. And it is a book that they only gave out. They didn't sell or anything. And it is not like just superlatives is the word, I guess. It is detailed. They have templates on how to make the body panels. They have blueprints on making the A arms. So you could extract certain things, but I thought, wow, this is interesting. I was thumbing through it, but it's like brand spanking new. I put it up And it was another one of those up for 10 minutes and bam, sold for like $150. And it was just.
Yeah, but that sounds like a pretty rare book.
It is.
It's kind of cool. Kind of neat idea.
But it's a small market too, you know. It's yeah. But that's the kind of, you know, I've got like a brochure that was published by B&M on Pete Shapouris's Lime Fire back in the early 80s. You know, weird stuff like that. And it's just fun. It's kind of like rediscovering, but I said to myself, I said, you know what, Brad? You got to put in the pile the stuff if you're going to keep it, you're going to display it. You're going to buy some shelves and you're going to display it, and everything else you're going to sell, because most of this stuff, I look through it once and I put it in a box, and I don't need to be storing stuff like that anymore.
It's always kind of fun to look through some of the old magazines and the ads and those catalogs and look at the prices compared to, you know, the prices of stuff, intake manifolds, cylinder heads that you could buy compared to what things are today, crate engines and whatnot. I think the new crate engine from Ford, not the Godzilla engine, but whatever they're calling it, the iron block, you know, 7.3 liter, you know, engine. They're like, you could get the engine now and it's a fully running crate engine for $22,000. I'm like, I think my Mustang Cobra back in 93 wasn't $22,000. It was probably $21,000. It's like, now you can buy a crate engine for that much. And you're not even getting close to what it costs to buy like a Helifant engine or a GT500 supercharged crate engine. Like, this is pretty crazy. Now, then again, they're $100,000 cars, not $20,000 cars these engines are in, but...
And they're street cars that can practically do what drag cars did back then. You know, I mean, it's crazy. Like they were making a big deal. I had a hero card for Fat Jack's 46 Ford. And for those who followed Hot Rod Magazine back in the day, Pete Shapouris was building Lime Fire, which was pretty much a drag 32 roadster, a drag car. And Fat Jack, who's no longer around either, he was a big hot rod builder with Boyd and Pete and, you know, all those guys. And he built an all steel 46 Ford coupe. That is a giant car by any standards, a lot of metal. And he put like a 540 cubic inch blown fuel injected motor in it. And he had it run a 940s. At the drag strip.
Yeah.
And it was crazy. They called it the fat attack, you know? And I mean, it was crazy. It was so fast for that era. And it was so cool. So it's fun to go through all that stuff. But back to modern day, you and I were talking as we went on the air, and there's another new racing series coming up. And this one was pretty interesting for a couple reasons. It's called the E1 Electric Superboat Championships that are starting in 2024. And their very first event is going to be in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia. Then they go to Spain. Then they've got a couple races in Venice, one in Monaco, and then some other places to be announced. Venice might be a really cool place to see these guys race through the canals of Venice. But what I found interesting was not just that these boats look trick as hell and they're all electric, but the team owners. Tom Brady owns one of the teams, Steve Aoki, Rafael Nadal, and a whole bunch of other people. It was pretty interesting. Did you look at these boats, Matt, and check them out?
I didn't get into the specs of the boat, but I was looking at them. I'm just starting to get into it because I went to the other program, Sail GP, which is the modern U.S. owned racing sailboats, like the kind of a catamaran hydrofoil. And it's like an IndyCar race. Like it's kind of like a short course around some buoys. And from the grandstands, you can see them. They do a couple of laps and then then they stop. And then it's another heat, almost like an Olympic event, you know? And then when I was there for that, and I think E1 is similar in that it's kind of a hydrofoil race boat, but one's under power, one's not. But the technology, the use of carbon fiber and ultra lightweight, and it's pretty cool, all the stuff that they put into this.
They said that they'll be reaching speeds in excess of 100 kilometers per hour, which is, you know, about 130 miles an hour. And they come up on plane almost instantly, which is due to the torque of those electric motors. And the, you know, they're going to sprint, they're going to race. And they're saying, just like you said with that sailboat series, they're keeping them close to shore for the spectators. And yeah. That's what's really important and nice. And they said one of the reasons they can do that is they said a lot of the offshore powerboats have to be out at sea because of the noise restrictions. Well, they're electric. So they,
You're talking about, there's a single seat, there's a single driver. It's got an electric outboard motor from Mercury Racing, mm-hmm. and it's on hydrofoils. And then there's a battery pack behind the driver on the boat, but not contained in the electric outboard motor. So it's just kind of interesting. I guess puts a little bit of that weight kind of center on the of the hydrofoils, right, behind the driver. Probably.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. I'll be interested to see how this comes along and you know, how these team owners are involved, you know, like Tom Brady, and you know, they've got a lot of sports celebrities, and then, you know, Steve Aoki, who is a big DJ, and
yeah,
you know, he has a thing in Vegas, where he plays every night, doesn't he? One of the hotels.
I think he had a residency there. Yeah. I'm looking up some of the specs. I'm not sure that we saw the same thing, but this is saying they're going to do about 58 miles an hour. It was 50 knots. It's a cool looking boat, and it's got a full
canopy.
It's
a great looking boat.
So it's kind of interesting. So E1 series, E in the number one series.com. You can go and check this out if you guys are interested.
Yeah. And they're on all
go to one of these races.
Well, so they should fly us over to Monaco to watch it. I think they're, you know, they should have shift and steer there. Don't you think, Matt?
That sounds like a pretty good idea.
And while we're there, Porsche could give us one of those 911 STs to drive around in, which is just the subtle change they did to the nose and the back. And of course, the manual 6-speed behind the GT3 RS motor is just makes this car so appealing, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of a cool, like, kind of raw, you know, analog cross between the GT3 and the GT3 Touring and the GT3 like RS, basically.
Yeah.
The tester coming in on this car, I haven't had a chance to drive it yet. I might be able to get one to drive. I was talking to Porsche about it recently, so we're trying to work it out. But supposed
four
to be just
liter,
fantastic.
518 horsepower, man, with a 9,000 RPM redline. That's a nice car to drive right there.
Yeah, I think someone was just talking about it. It might have been like Dario Franchini. I think he was just talking about it either on his social media or something. And I haven't talked to him in a little while since I think Rennsport. But just rave reviews all around for this type of car.
And it's the subtleties they did to it, you know, that the little air vent in the front fender carrying that line off trailing, the rear fascia line, the front fascia line. And I really, excuse me, as much as I liked the big wings and was a fan of the whale tail in the 80s and everything, this car just looks so sweet without the wing on the back. It just looks good, you know? And but you know what? This brings me to a point of, you know, something we were talking about here in the office the other day. And it's, by the way, that car is $291,650, which makes it the most expensive 911 on sale today. And what do you think, Matt? You can get it for sticker?
Oh, I can't. Can you?
No, I don't think anybody can because they say that it's been commanding 100,000 over sticker. So
I don't. Yeah, I don't know how you get it for sticker, but I don't know if you saw any of the interior shots, but they did.
Yes.
Like a roll cage in the back. I don't want to say like a roll bar or harness, but they did this really cool looking piece, sort of this organic looking carbon fiber structure. It doesn't need to be a roll cage to like pash spec, you know, like a racing spec or certainly something like an NHRA. So they were able to add the rigidity and safety in their own rules, right? And this cool looking piece in the back is interesting. I wonder if we're going to start seeing more things like that on the SEMA show floor in custom cars. Is the idea of custom cars going, oh, we got to do a roll cage, but we're still so conventional in our thinking of a roll cage, unless you do like a hidden cage, right? Then you're just adding
structure. Where they try and integrate it up into the headliner and down the...
Yeah, right. They go, oh, I don't want to see it. I don't want to see it. We've always had like traditional cage and then hidden cage. No one's really gone out and done something like this and go, oh, I want to show off this masterpiece of a new type of structure. I mean, you do see a little bit of that, but not a ton.
Let me tell you something. Cool. One of the most difficult things to do is a roll cage in a completed car like that. When you're talking a SEMA car.
Yeah.
You know, cause when I did that, the year that GM gave me that Sunfire and asked me to make it into a road race car for SEMA, and we did the wide body and everything. You pull everything out, you fit it, you know, I measure all the tubing, I get everything welded up. Then you got to, you know, you can't just bolt it to the floor pan, you know, it's got to, you know, if you want it to really work. And we had the belts and everything attached to it. But you forget that, you know, you've got a car that has a whole interior in it. So everything's got to fit around that, but getting everything in and everything has to be slip tubed and then it's got to work so that it is such a pain in the ass, but the results, as you said, and when I look at that and how beautiful they did it, it's like, you know, that thing has to go together almost like the body goes over it or something. It's just, you know, it's just crazy, but it's beautiful. I love the way they did it. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, it looks good. It's a cool piece. You're right. What is the installation process?
Yeah.
How does it come apart? There's got to be certain pieces. I'm sure they figured out a way to make it happen. But anyway, it's cool.
But the thing that this car makes me think of, when I hear 518 horsepower in a 911, back in the 80s, you know, when I was driving a 911 and it didn't have anywhere near that horsepower, you could get into trouble and they were a handful, you know. Now, of course, we have, you know, all of the computerized, you know, wheel control and things like that. However, it brought up a conversation here in the office the other day about, we see video after video after video online of people driving way over the head now that these cars have so much horsepower. Case in point, a couple weekends ago, right here in LA, was it Michael P. Jordan or Michael B. Jordan that wrecked his Michael Ferrari?
Yeah.
And he said, oh, I think something got in my way or something ran out in front of me, until some Uber driver came up with dash cam footage that was right behind him. And it shows him coming down the street and some guy in another Ferrari pulls up alongside him. He swats the throttle, loses it, takes out about three parked cars. You know, that's how I interpreted the video. I'm not saying that's what he did because I don't want to get sued. But that's what it looked like. Then yesterday I saw some guy cruising down the freeway. I didn't. This was another video. And a truck's dash cam. He gets on the freeway, goes to goose it to change lanes, and the car is a little fishtail. The guy doesn't know how to drive it, overcorrects. He literally went off the freeway and hit a light pole. And it's just like, you see this again and again with the SRT cars and the Ferraris, and the people need to spend money on learning how to drive. And I don't mean that facetiously. I mean, they literally need to go take a driving course. You know, you have, yeah. I have,
It's funny you mentioned that. I had dinner with Adam Carolla the other night. We had a nice little date night. We went and saw a movie and got and had dinner together. And then we were talking, and we were just kind of getting into like young people today, the kids today, and you know, do his kids want to go to college and whatever. And he's like, yeah, I think they kind of want it, but they don't really know what to study and whatever. And I'm not sure how it's going to help them in life. You know, they're not exactly going to be doctors or lawyers or I was like, all right, whatever. And so we had this good conversation about it. And I was like, honestly, every kid today should have to take two courses, and that's it. If you don't want to go to college, it doesn't matter if you go to college or not. Like your final year of high school, whatever. Every kid should take a defensive driving course and a financial planning course. You have to understand what money is. You have to understand what money is. You have to understand how to put money away. Not everything could just be virtual on Venmo and whatever. Like, money is a real thing.
No, what do you mean? You click on your phone. Pay it in payments, Matt. You know, yeah. I literally saw I saw something online the other day about a guy who had bought, like, it was something ridiculous, like a Big Mac and a Coke. And it said, hey, pay it over 3 easy payments of $1.25 for the day. And he was like, oh, so I did it. I'm like, are you kidding me? You know, I mean, it's like.
Yes. You need a good defensive driving course. Go to like the Radford School, which was the Bondurant School. You got to be able to go to a decent school, even like the half day course, learn what a car is capable of, learn what you're capable of. And you need a good financial planning course. You need to understand what real money is. You need to understand interest rates, investments, 401k. Like, you should have all of that stuff. Those are the only two things you really need.
Doesn't the money just keep coming in, man? Come on.
And then you could create your own WinBrad stuff.
That was my retirement plan.
that's Brad's future. All the shit he's acquired for the last 3 decades is all going to go up for sale.
The thing is, though, like when I went to, what, as you said, Radford, which when I went, it was Bondurant. You get such an education, even as an experienced driver. I'd already raced. I'd already done things, but you learn so much more about what the car's capable of, what you're capable of. And even in like those cradles where it simulates water driving and things like that and drifting. And it's just, it's amazing. And then if you want to be able to pay to go to the Radford School, you have to have a knowledge of how to take care of your money. Those are the two
things.
That's right. So your date night, what film did you guys go see?
So we saw Ferrari. We saw the new film from Michael Mann with Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz. And
is Adam as good at that part as he appears to be in the trailers?
He does a fantastic job. Everyone was good in the movie. Adam Driver's great. Penelope Cruz is great. It's a really interesting story. Everything you heard about Ferrari kind of like putting his cars ahead of the drivers. You're like, if you die, you die. That's the risk. You know, all of that comes across in the movie. However, overall, the movie is good. It's just not fantastic. It would be a better documentary than it would be in a feature film like that. In a blockbuster feature film, you need like a hero. There was no hero in the film. You need to get invested into the supporting characters. When you watch Ford v Ferrari, you loved Peter Miles, the kid. You loved Henry Ford, his scenes with the old man, like him in the car. His scenes were great. Everybody in that film, Lee Iacocca, played by, I think, John Bernthal played it. You love those characters. In this movie,
Well, we're in LA, so you have to have a protagonist and an antagonist.
I understand. Like, we as fans of, like, so we made the documentary, The 24 Hour War, and then saw the feature film Ford v Ferrari. Right. And we've always said, what a great, fantastic, like, doubleheader. Go see the Ford v Ferrari and then go see the documentary. And it fills in the blanks of what's real and what's not real in that story. And you appreciate the Hollywood version. And then you really understand the documentary version. With Ferrari, Enzo Ferrari is not a likable person. His wife, who was, you know, angry because he was cheating on her, and he had the Piero, he had the son there. When Dino, his son Dino, died with the wife, his girlfriend had Piero Ferrari, who is still now alive and well and vice chairman, right, or whatever, of Ferrari. So she was always angry, not really likable. You didn't have a real connection to the son, and the drivers, they didn't really build this great story about that driver. So if a driver got injured or driver got killed in a feature film like that, it's like, there's not a lot of, you know, you're like, you're not devastated, 'cause you're like, I didn't know anything about that character. Right.
You didn't know, like, that he had a family and that he worked his way up. No, it was just,
yeah. So it was just so much about Enzo and his thought process of building the company. I mean, listen, it's still worth going to see because it's a good story. But if you're expecting Rush, or if you're expecting Ford v Ferrari, it's not quite there.
Matt, I wanted to go see that. And Michael Mann, I love him. I
love Michael Mann. Heat is a great film. And Adam brought up an interesting point. He's like, I talked to Michael Mann several times over the years. We sat down, we did interviews. He's been making this film for 20 years. And Adam goes, so it's expecting it to be a little better. If you had 20 years of being able to work on this film, I thought it would be just like a little bit better.
Well, it's 20 years of trying to get it financed and, you know, maybe 4 years of making it. So.
I'm not even exactly sure, because it went through the process of Robert De Niro was attached as Enzo Ferrari. And then at one point, Hugh Jackman was attached as Enzo Ferrari. And Adam Driver did a great job. Just interesting. Listen, I think Penelope Cruz will get some accolades for her role, because it's a strong, independent woman, and she's kind of put in a bad situation as the character in the film, and she does a good job in it. But also, like, her character wasn't so great that it's going to sweep the awards. It's not, yeah. You don't look at it and go, you know what, for what she was given, she did a great job. You could have given her more, is kind of how I saw it in the film.
What's wrong with you? You could have given her more.
And you know, and it was nice to see Patrick Dempsey in there and play a character, but there were certain scenes, like Enzo Ferrari sitting at a table, you know, like dinner with a bunch of his drivers, and he gives this whole speech about what it means to, you know, to win, to be a ruthless winner. But the scene was shot weird in that it just focused, it was like minutes long on Enzo. There was no reaction from the drivers. The camera didn't move at all. The camera didn't, like, look at the drivers. It didn't create any sympathy or emotion from the drivers that he was talking to. And it was just an interesting way of filming and doing the storytelling. It was really all from Enzo's perspective. So just kind of an interesting thought. And the big race is the Mille Miglia, which is a 1,000-mile race. And huge. It's cool, but it's not a spectator race.
No.
Especially in the 50s. If something happened tragic on the race, it takes hours for, like, a news reporter to see it and to get to a payphone and to, like, call it in or write it up. Like, there's nothing immediate. When you watch something like Rush, or even Ford v Ferrari, when you're at Le Mans and there's grandstands and there's people, when there's an accident, you can get a huge audience reaction on camera from grandstands. People, oh my God, you know, audience is going nuts and people are running and screaming. And like, you couldn't get that when they're running down a dirt road in the middle of nowhere.
You know? A guy in the grandstands holding a transistor radio, and he goes, Oh, a couple hours ago, there was an accident. We don't know what's happened to the guy yet.
From Enzo's perspective, he's like sitting in his office taking a meeting, and he gets a call to hear what happened in the race, you know, at some point during the race.
He's like, they wrecked my car?
Yeah, yeah. It's just kind of, it's one of those things. It's not this instant thing. There was no, with Ford v. Ferrari, when he was like, you know, when they were messing with the other teams, then they were, you know, swapping out the whole wheel with the brake and the whole thing and whatever. Like, you can do that in the instant. Even when the cars came in for a pit, they didn't do a lot on the car. The driver came in and he's like, it's running like shit, the gearbox is broken, the engine's not winding out, but I'm not a pussy, I'm gonna finish the race. And that's the pit. Like, well, they didn't even do anything. You know? Anyway, that's kind of how it came down. It's a very interesting story, but not Ford V.
I'm gonna still see it. Okay.
You should go see it.
That's it. You haven't talked me out of it.
Good. But I'm not trying to talk you out of it.
Now let's put this in perspective. Everybody's heard on the news by now, probably, that Tesla has a massive recall. 2 million cars are being recalled because of the self-driving. Now, let me put this in perspective for you, Matt. Since 1947, Ferrari has sold around 220,000 cars.
Yeah.
Since 1947. And they're recalling 2 million at Tesla. So when they do the Tesla story and they have Adam Driver play Elon Musk.
It's funny you mentioned that. There was a scene in Ferrari where his finance guy is like, you're bleeding money doing all of this racing. You need to sell more road cars. And he goes, how many road cars did we sell? Something like 150? He's like, no, 98. He's like, oh, we sold 198 cars. He's like, no, you sold 98 cars. And he's like, oh, okay. And that was for the year. They sold 98 cars that year.
I mean, people do not realize that Ferrari's sales have, I mean, they're still not giant compared to other car companies, but they've escalated so much during the 2000s to where it's incredible. Because one of the things, I don't know if I've ever brought it up here on the show, but every Ferrari to North America, Ferrari North America, they used to come in through the port and they went to a warehouse in, I can't remember the name of the city, Garden Grove, I think it was. And it was over by where Yamaha's headquarters and Mitsubishi has their headquarters over there. Nondescript, didn't even say Ferrari on it. And if the cars had gotten scratched in transport or anything like that, we repaired them at Hot Rods by Boyd. We would color sand them, or we would spray them and color match them and things like that. And you would go over there and you would realize how few, because this is in the era of the Testarossa and things like that. It was a handful of cars, man. I mean, we're talking dozens. We're not talking, you know, and people just think that Ferrari always sold, you know, hundreds of cars or thousands of cars. No, it's, I mean, even back then in the 80s, it was dozens of cars coming in at, you know, at a time. And it was just, it was amazing. And,
yeah, like you're saying, compared to Tesla, how many cars they managed to build, almost 2 million cars, more than 2 million cars, almost all of them are going to have to be recalled. All the ones, excuse me, that have autopilot on them. The government is saying, quote, not sufficient to prevent driver misuse.
I know. I saw that statement.
And
they showed it accompanied with a photo of one planted into a tree.
Into a tree.
Yeah.
Now, what the NHTSA is saying,
National Highway Traffic and Safety Association.
Yeah. There's been 11 incidents with Tesla's auto steer in August of 21. Then they said they've recorded nearly 1,000 crashes where autopilot was initially alleged to have been used. And they focused on specifically 322 autopilot involved crashes that they can confirm. So we heard about this. We heard about some of the big more tragic accidents and going, yeah. And I know I've sort of teased Tesla and I go, how is this weird that they can prototype and just on the public for selling them cars and then go, well, we're going to refine it as people die in their cars. If I don't know, it's just like if you're a pharmaceutical company, we're like, everyone's dying from taking Advil. And we're like, yeah, we're just going to refine the formula and see if we can prevent fewer deaths.
That fentanyl.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know I tease them for that, but it kind of caught up on them and them going,
okay, now let me give the other side of the fence though. And it's called autopilot, but there's also some pilot error because how many guys have we seen their video of them sleeping behind the wheel? And, you know, if you demolish your car, hurt yourself, hurt someone else, and you were sleeping behind the wheel, and as they're taking you away, how many of those people do you honestly think would go, yeah, I was sound asleep, dude. They're going to go, no, man, the car just like freaked out on me. You know, I mean,
right. And that's what they're saying. They're saying your quote unquote autopilot is not sufficient enough to prevent pilot error.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. So it's not autonomous. It's not autopilot. It's a driver assist at best. And that's been one of the big debates is even what they've called it.
Because we're hoping that our pilots on our plane when we fly at the holidays behind that locked door are not snoozing. You know, that even though they got it on autopilot, they're aware of what's going on. So yeah,
anyway, that's that.
I think we're giving people, just like we said about horsepower, we're giving certain people more than they can really handle. It'd be like taking certain people to an all-you-can-eat at Vegas, and they believe that sign. It's all-you-can-eat, so you cannot eat anymore. Or what was it, Red Lobster, I heard on the news, had to do away with their all-you-can-eat shrimp for $20 because they – did you hear this?
Yeah, it's been all over. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
They lost something like $2 million in the last quarter. So they're now making it $29.95 all you can eat or something like that.
Yeah, they're not getting rid of it. But the problem was is they're like, this is a really good campaign. We can get people to come in. They'll buy drinks and they'll buy other food. So let's offer it for dinner and for lunch. And then people were coming in and just ordering the shrimp, not drinking, not doing anything else. They're out the door for $22. And they're like, it turns out we wildly underestimated how many people would just come in, eat shrimp, and leave.
You know?
It's a huge loss. Millions of dollars.
Oh, so crap.
They have to kind of rethink the process. Have you driven the Lamborghini Urus?
I have not. I've sat in one, but I have not driven it.
I've driven a few. Just a crazy SUV. It's kind of a paddle shift only deal, like the Lamborghinis. When you get in it, you flick the paddle, it puts it into gear, and it moves. You don't really put it into drive. That's kind of how it does it for you.
And
it sounds great.
I have to say, it's a car that grew on me. I did not like the first one I saw, but now
I totally agree. Totally agree. As you learn more about what it's capable of, like the Nissan GTR came out, you're like, not the best looking car, but now you see it. It's so cool because you understand what it means, right? You understand what it's capable of. So the Lamborghini Urus, cool interior, fun to drive, sounds good, turbo V8, but just expensive. And it's just wildly expensive.
And let me give you a little side note here. Someone I know bought one and they said to me, hey, Brad, do you know about doing an LLC in Montana? Because I found out what my license plates are going to be.
Yeah. Insurance, your plates.
Oh my.
It's, I don't know. What are they like? 300 grand, 250, 280 grand.
So your plates in California are like 30 grand a year because they're like 10%. So when you see a car that's very expensive driving around with Montana plates, it's because they've created an LLC, because up there you just pay like, you know, a few thousand instead of tens of thousands.
So if you want to save some money, but get something pretty much that's the Lamborghini Urus, the Audi RS Q8, they have the RS version now. which is a revision from what they've been doing before. The what's new for the Q8, for the RS Q8 for this year, for 2024, a couple little features. There's a remote start that's available through the app. It's got a few other things you can kind of control through it. There's the carbon ceramic brakes that were available have been dropped. I guess not a lot of people were optioning to get it. And they refreshed the styling stuff a little bit on the thing. But it's a 4-liter twin turbo V8, 591 horsepower. The SQ8's 500 horsepower. So if you want the RS, steps up to 591 horsepower, 590 pound feet of torque. It's got the Quattro all-wheel drive. It's got the 8-speed automatic transmission, and there's a 48-volt hybrid system that kind of works behind the scenes to try to make it more fuel efficient. Although, good luck, because it still gets something like 13 miles per gallon city and 19 on the highway. It scoots, man. It's probably as fast every bit around the track and 0-60 as the Lamborghini. We're talking 0-60 in 3.2 seconds. I think the Lamborghini's like 3.1.
Yeah.
Now, I've been driving the car, and they've got it optioned up with the 23-inch rims and the air ride suspension and the massaging seats, and not quite the diamond stitch, but it's got their kind of shape to it. That's kind of cool mm-hmm. looking. It's nice. It's comfortable. The tech is in it. Now, what's interesting is Adam just got a new car, and he got the electric version. He's got the Q8 e-tron.
Mm-hmm.
Now he got it right before they announced the S8 e-tron or the SQ8 rather, which is similar in performance to his electric version, but the handling and suspension has been completely revised. It's incredibly fast around the track. So if you want the naturally aspirated, you want the gas engine twin turbo version, the RS Q8. And if you want the electric version, the SQ8 e-tron, or kind of the two comparable models there, both quick, both around the track. But the Audi, man, this bang for the buck. It's about 130 grand. Not that that's cheap, but the base price is about 114,000. I think the one I'm driving is about 140,000. It's got a few options and stuff on it. Yeah, it's cool. Cool piece.
And they look good. I mean, they look
sharp
good.
Looking. Yeah.
They run good. I just have such a problem with, you know, it's not the price of the car. It's in California, the taxes, the plates, everything, they just kill you. And it used to be, as you and I both know, because we have cars, that the plates used to drop precipitously over the years.
Yeah.
But California changed that all, and they don't go down. In fact, a couple of years ago, plates went up, and now they're coming back, you know. But, and as a side note, I just heard driving in today that California's saying, well, there's so many electric cars on the road that the gas tax, so we're going to have to do something about that. We're probably going to raise the gas taxes. I'm like going, whoa, wait a minute. You know, all these people have to charge up at these public charging things. Why don't you just put a tax on that rather than charge all the gas people? But see, they don't want us driving gas cars, so they're going to do that.
That's right. They don't want us driving cars until they realize there's no money in it.
Yeah.
There was a news report coming out. I forgot who was doing the testing on it. I don't think it was the who was it? I don't think it was the National Highway Travel Safety, whatever. It was some other program going. There were one step closer to having breathalyzers in all new cars. So we're going to eliminate drunk driving. And I go, I'm all for it, right? It's dangerous, but that's never going to work. It's never going to work. Think of the financial shitstorm. Like, if you couldn't get into your car at all without blowing in that breathalyzer, first of all, people that don't need it will make a huge fuss. And and won't be buying a bunch of these cars, and massive drop in revenue. You live in Orange County. I don't know what Orange County does if they don't hand out DUI tickets, because that seems like a huge bread and butter for them down there.
Hey, we're party city down here, man.
There's a lot of tickets. Like, what's going to happen financially to the police departments if they can't hand out tickets?
Just so many things. I mean, it's just craziness. You know, you just look at everything. How about, I read a report this week that the government, and I remember when they said this 2 years ago or 3 years ago, whatever it was, that they were putting up $7.5 billion to put in charging stations across America so that people with electric cars could have fast charging available to them. And here it is 4 years later. You know how many have been built? Zero.
Yeah.
The money's almost all gone. Not one project has broken ground, and they don't even know where the money went. And it's like, yeah, that's the problem. You know, it's like, why does Tesla have such great charging out here on the West, at least? Because it's a private entity and they could get it done and make it happen. They were saying that each charger each individual charger was like $125,000 to $275,000 per charger. You know, it's like, yeah, I don't know why that is, you know, but
yeah, I don't know, but
we got to get, they've got to have a company that just converts gas stations at some point, you know, because we see gas stations sitting vacant all over the place. Why not make those? Why didn't the government just buy those and put them in and charge it, you know?
I don't think it could be done with the government supervision. I think
that's probably
when the huge oil companies want to step up, you know, the Chevrons and the 76s and the Mobils of the world, if they're going to go, hey, we're going to put together a program where we reach out to all of our gas station owners and go, we've partnered with some people on the technology side, and we're going to work with you on getting a couple of charging stations installed at your gas station. So you can sell gas, you can sell electricity, you can get people to come into your thrift store, you know, to your convenience store, and do it that way. And once the big oil companies support that and support their franchisees or whatever,
or whoever does it. Yeah. Somebody that has massive infrastructure and wants to do it for profit, that's when it'll happen. And that's when electric cars will cost as much to operate as gas cars, because it'll be, I'm going to get a fill up. Yeah. It's I needed 20 watts at, $7 a watt or whatever, you know?
So. Yeah. Anyway, it's an interesting thought. Let's, I think we're going to wrap it up. I guess we're going to try, because we don't have Aaron here. We're going to try to get one more show in the books.
Yeah, we're going to try
for this year.
And then you'll probably hear some over the holidays. You'll hear some older shows that we replay, and we'll try and find some good ones for you to dig up. And that'll be about it. So we're going to be wrapping it up a year. Matt's going to Monaco. I believe, and you're going to your villa in Monaco, aren't you?
I wish I was. I haven't been.
Don't
there
you always?
I don't even know where it is.
Winter in the south of France.
I wish, but not quite there yet. Guys, thanks so much for listening, and as always, we love your support. And if you got some holiday parties, you're looking for some gifts, go to drinkbravago.com. Buy your friends some booze. Buy yourself some booze.
That's a good idea. And the more you buy, the more you want. So, hey, everyone. Hey, don't forget, we haven't had any messages. I mean, we get them, but we get messages from the listeners kind of like in little blurps. So keep those blurps coming, and we appreciate it. And follow me at Bradley_Fanshaw, or as Matt was saying, it's holiday time. Buy yourself a set of wheels at bondspeedwheels.com or on Instagram. And everyone, we'll be back next week for one more show of the year. And that's a promise, not a threat. Thanks, everybody.
like this show, also listen to Man Seeks Adventure and Dixon's Wild Ride. You can find Man Seeks Adventure at manseeksadventure.com.